Hi, I'm Julie.
And I'm Liz. We are business owners turned podcasters.
This show gives you the permission and tools to create your courageous second act.
We call this the Afterglow. On today's show, we have transformational mindset and success coach, Lise Wilcox. We were drawn to Lise not only because of her ability to help high potential women courageously become the version of themselves that they dream of, but also because of her unique and courageous story overcoming childhood trauma, divorce, and breast cancer. In her work, Lise uses NLP and EFT to help her clients find the inner peace, professional clarity, confidence, and deep self-love that she herself has come to know and feel. She's got zero tolerance for BS when digging in and getting to what matters, and we already love her for this. She's a self-titled authenticity coach, a podcaster, and a beautiful writer. Her first book, To Call Myself Beloved, which shares the same name as her inspiring podcast, has just been released, and it's a story of hope, healing, and coming home. Lise, welcome to the Afterglow. We are so happy to have you here.
Thank you for that glowing introduction. That's all so you. Lovely.
It's you. All you. We're so thrilled to have you. And your story is so inspiring. You know, they say, there's all these sayings like when it rains, it pours, or like bad things happen in threes. And, you know, we just read your bio when it says childhood trauma, divorce, and breast cancer. Like, I know for myself and for a lot of people out there, like, we would just want to crawl under a rock and never come out again. And so if we can go back and start with the childhood and childhood in general, it doesn't have to be specific to the trauma, but what was your childhood like?
It was perfect on the outside and incredibly painful on the inside, I think is the best way to paint that brush. And I'm not unique in that, you know, like, that's not a unique experience to me and me alone. We all have just wild and shocking things that happen to us as kids that we tend to not talk about because we think that's what normal looked like, right? And then we end up having so much trauma, not because of even what happened, but because of the inability to share our experience or talk about what happened. So for me, it was pretty simple. My mom left, my dad stayed, a stepmom came in, shit hit the fan. I didn't even ask you, can we swear on this podcast?
Because it's like, go for it.
Shit hit the fan. She was really emotionally abusive, really psychologically abusive. And the messaging that came out of that is like, hey, look, no matter what you do, it's never going to be enough. So why don't you radically change your personality, do whatever it takes to please me, and even then, I'm not going to love you. And so that obviously took decades, like decades of unlearning. And I think for a lot of people, you don't unlearn it, or maybe you don't unlearn it till your 60s or your 70s. For me, I'm really proud that I was able to unlearn that. But yeah, it did a number on me for sure. And it affected so many decisions in my life, from work to partnership to friendships. It just kept repeating this same narrative of you are not worthy and you are not lovable over and over again, until I chose to go back and unlearn that and replace it with new narratives that feel much more wonderful and honest to me.
That is a deep core wound, right? That unworthiness, which, as you say, I think all of us feel to a certain extent, but often it's society which makes us feel unworthy. For a lot of people, we've had, you know, some kind of, I guess, I don't know if it's a lot of people, but some people have had that attachment parenting where you feel that worthiness and that nurturing from a parent. But at what point, you know, when did you first get a glimpse that this was going on, that you had conformed to someone who was never going to be happy with who you are?
I was in my 30s. I was married. And, you know, in the book, I tell this same story because I feel like this is the origin story of my own, like, waking up process, right? That I was in my early 30s and, you know, we lived in this epic 7-bedroom century home. Like, everything was perfect. I have 3 incredible little girls, this husband in our, like, super swank kitchen. And I remember lying there looking at, like, exposed brick and new stainless appliances and 60 square feet of Carrara marble, and just lying there being like, oh my God, if this isn't enough for me, what the hell is wrong with me? And that real profound awareness hit me. I speak often of like getting these little messages, and I think it's a communication with the divine. You can call it your higher self, whatever you want. But to me, this little voice pops up and it's like, none of this will be enough for you until you are enough for you. And that message was so intense and so powerful, because when you don't know what you don't yet know, those were crazy words to hear, right? But that was the beginning of this very dramatic shift of like, okay, so maybe I need to stop focusing on what he thinks of me and what she thinks of me and how I am defined by my value, my external value, and really start shifting that awareness inside and have a look at, wait, who am I? What do I like? What do I want? And this was a conversation I'd never ever had with myself before, to really get clear of like, okay, I know you've done this for a number of years because it made somebody else happy. Or I know you participated in this conversation because it got a good laugh. Or judging fiercely this group of people over here, that was okay because, you know, that made you feel like you could belong to a different group of people. And I undid all that and turned that attention back on, what are my values? What do I envision for my life? What feels really good for me? What brings me joy? And from there, was able to cultivate a brand new self-awareness, really finely tune my own emotional intelligence, and start living in alignment with who I am as a person.
So is that what you did? Is that how you did this, to come out of this sort of lifelong people-pleasing habit that you had? I once had a therapist say to me, call me a chameleon, right? Mm-hmm. I was just a chameleon to everybody else's needs and what everybody else wanted me to be. And I was a complete people pleaser. And I too went through this whole transformation of like, well, what? Oh, I don't need to be that way. Yeah. So like, what were some of the actual steps that you took? You know, you say you started asking yourself questions that you'd never asked yourselves, but were there other specifics that you can, you know, maybe share with our listeners who might be going through the same thing?
Absolutely. For me, I've identified it to be a process. You know, we love processes. I get asked this question all the time, and it's been such a layered process of healing that for me, I've done the best I can to break it down. And I call it emotional alchemy, this concept that we can take something really dark and painful, heavy and unwanted, and consciously exert energy and effort into that to transform it into something really beautiful and light, golden, uniquely your own. And so for me, that started with really simple steps, with like talking to myself in the mirror. That's such a simple step, but it's such a profound step to be able to actually look at yourself and be like, I love you. I know you're struggling, and I know you feel like you're not supported. I know you feel like a failure and a fake, but I'm here to tell you that I am here to support you, and that I am here with you, and I respect you, and I love you. That was like, it gives me the shivers still, because I do this work with my clients, and they go from this like, how am I supposed to do this? Like that, I could never speak to myself that way. And they radically change their internal dialogue to being their own. It's like you reparent yourself. Right? It's like you start filling up your own reserves with love and acceptance instead of judgment and rejection. So that was a big step for me to be able to incorporate that into my daily life, until it just became the way I thought. Like, I don't have to look at myself in the mirror anymore and talk. When I've had a really challenging day or something doesn't work out in the way in which I'd hoped, then I definitely have to coach myself in the mirror like that. And I think the second mega impact would be setting intentions and backing them up with affirmations. So when in times of extreme stress, you know, we are all in a time of that relatability right now, but through cancer, through divorce, it's so much. And you know that saying, like, the only way to eat an elephant is to go one bite at a time. For me, it was like one bite at a time. So today, my intention is to take a breath before I respond to anybody. And it was like, okay. So anytime I got a really nasty text or a really harsh critique or judgment, I would just be like, and then respond. It was like tiny little things like that. But when you take these teeny tiny little baby steps and you never, ever, ever stop moving, magically you've walked like this entire journey, and you turn around, and you're like, what just happened? How did I get here? So I would say, like, changing my inner dialogue through mirror work and being very intentional about setting intentions and backing them up with affirmations. Like, I choose to be patient, or I am a person of value. I trust this is working. I trust myself to follow through. I don't know the solution, but I'm open to receiving that. So anything like that, I really had to really coach myself through a lot.
You have delivered and shared so much impact already in just a few minutes that I had to remind myself, we haven't even touched on the cancer or the divorce yet. And I want to go back to just that period we said, you said, where you noticed that something was off, that it wasn't enough. And I think, because I think this happens, I think people get that divine inspiration or intuition and they ignore it. Mm-hmm. And so how did you know to listen? Because you were living in that beautiful house, yeah, right? You had comfort. You had a degree of comfort. You had a marriage. You were upsetting a lot. You were disturbing a lot by choosing this path of, by choosing this path of figuring out who you are and then listening to that voice. So how did you know to listen?
I don't know. I just knew. My kids, maybe your kids have had this book or you've seen it too, but there's this little book that we have called Gotta Go. It's just like tiny and yellow and has a picture of a monarch caterpillar on it. And the whole notion of this book is this little tiny bug is crawling around being like, I gotta go. I gotta go. Mm-hmm. I gotta go to Mexico. And the birds are flying and they're like, do you know how far Mexico is? Like, you're gonna die. And all these people are like, what? Are you insane? What are you doing? And the bug's like, I don't know how I know this, but I gotta get to Mexico. And, you know, spoiler alert, she gets to Mexico and she turns into this like transcendent monarch butterfly. And that's what it felt like to me. It was like, mm-hmm, I don't know why of all the times in my life, now was the time I'm going to start listening to this, but it was a bell I couldn't unring. It was a message, mm-hmm, message I couldn't unhear. I was like, I've got two choices. I get to stay lonely and feeling trapped in my own life of luxury and perfection, or I can do this really, really, really difficult thing and press, mm-hmm, the detonation button on my marriage, watch my life explode, and then hope I'll be there to catch the pieces and like put it back together or build something brand new. And to me, it's like, thank God I listened, because the alternative would not have been good for anybody. Like, forget about me and my needs. That wouldn't have been a good marriage. That wouldn't have been a good example to set for my children. That wouldn't have been, my business would not have come to light. Like, there's so much in hindsight that I can look back and just be so grateful that I had the wherewithal to be like, I know you're scared, sister, but you have to do this.
I love that butterfly analogy. We have a sign on our wall in our yoga studio that says, follow the butterflies. Yeah. And it's that sensation of, you know, the butterflies in your tummy. You get the butterflies in your tummy, and they're either this kind of nervous energy or excited energy. And oftentimes it's what stops us and it prevents us from doing the next thing that could be great or it could be a failure, who knows. But the idea that you were not only on a journey to transform into this butterfly, but you followed those butterflies, those questions inside of you. So I love that. And I also love your two really strong tips. The first one being very deep self-compassion. Right? Looking at yourself in the mirror and having that self-compassion. Liz and I have done a lot of research with Kristen Neff on self-compassion. And it is key to being able to reconnect with who you truly are, with your true self, right? We often give all of that self-compassion to our friends and it's like, you're amazing. You can do this, right? But we never give that to ourselves. And then I love also the mantras, and you're not just saying, I'm amazing. Right? Mm-hmm. You're backing it up with, I am choosing to be amazing today because of this, and I'm going to try my best. And I love those kind of mantras because they're backed up.
Well, it exactly. Because, you know, you said it in the introduction, I have a zero tolerance for bullshit. Like, I'm too practical. I'm too Dutch. I'm too Torian. Like, I'm too grounded. And so I can't say like, I'm amazing. I'm going to make today amazing, which I know works for people. But for me, I'm like, yeah. Tell me exactly specifically how you're going to do it. And so to me, it's like so much less glamorous and it's so much less sexy. And it's so much higher impact and higher value to be like, today I am choosing to respond with grace. Period. It's like, oh my God, I just gave myself a micro goal and I'm able to either meet it or not 50,000 times in a day. It's like, that's how you start to change your belief system. Not by this vague, like, I'm amazing, I'm totally capable. That's important. But what's also really important is to be incredibly specific. And you can come at that from like more of a neurolinguistic programming context and realize your subconscious is so specific. Like, it wants details. It doesn't want vague. It doesn't want broad strokes. It wants absolute truth of what are we doing here? Like, give me a guideline. So I have felt in my own experience and in my own coaching practice, like, specificity with absolute practicality.
Can you tell us a bit more about NLP? We're so curious about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It always sounds so weird to people. And for me, I'm like, no, this is just, it's like a user's manual as to how we think, which of course we're never taught, you know, like, tell me, would you use trigonometry more in your daily life? Or would you use like, how does your brain work and store trauma? It's like, well, I don't know. Hang on a second here.
I'm so glad I learned trigonometry.
I use it all the time. It actually comes in very handy if you're like, no.
Never.
NLP is just this like a school of thought or an embodiment of how to understand how your brain works. And when you understand how your brain works, both from your conscious mind and your subconscious mind, which is the stuff you don't even realize you know, you just kind of have learned it. Like, how do you know this is a table? You don't know. It's just always been a table, right? That's the stuff that's stored in your unconscious mind. So, well, how do I know I could never make six figures? Oh, I don't know. I just know it. No, that's something that you learned somewhere that somebody told you. Well, I would be so much happier and sexier if I just lost 30 pounds. Would you? Or is that a story that somebody told you that you're hanging on to? So using different modalities via NLP, we can actually have these little conversations, which usually feel like guided meditations with your subconscious mind, and figure out what the hell is happening. Like, what is the story that you're actually telling yourself? What were the mitigating circumstances and events that led you to believe something to be true? And does that work for you? Cool. Keep believing it. Keep doing it. If it doesn't work for you, how do we release it? How do we teach ourselves that it's really safe to learn the lesson we needed to learn from that, and we can let go of the negative emotional charge. That's why I'm able to, like, 4 years ago, I would not have been able to so cavalierly be like, I was horribly abused by my stepmother. Now mm-hmm. I can be like, oh, it just happened. I'm not attached to it because I've done the release work, right? I got everything I needed to get out of that experience. And now I have the experience that has informed my present, but doesn't dictate my future. And that's like the big power of NLP. It allows you to really understand how you got here and to learn that lesson, to appreciate, to shift your perspective of what it really means and how it's shaped your journey so far, but also to enable you to let go of the ickiness and the pain of it and move forward in a much healthier way.
All of this sounds very clean. But yeah. We know, I mean, Liz and I have dug pretty deep as well. And obviously your story is just, you know, like the trauma involved in everything that you've gone through. Like, this is messy shit. This is not, you know, go do a session, have some visualizations and be done. This is like digging deep. And so tell us about your process. You use the NLP, you use EFT in your own coaching, but your own process of digging deep and getting through this and getting messy and feeling it all.
For me personally?
A little bit of both, if you'd like.
For sure. I mean, that's like a loaded question. For me personally is what I share with my clients, right? It becomes like personal. It's a very good blend of personal and professional. But I think it's intense self-reflection and deep self-awareness. Constantly in the process of cultivating this emotional intelligence, this emotional awareness, which all of that is built on this foundation of self-love and acceptance. And, you know, I say this probably too much, but I get really disenfranchised with how over-memed stuff is and how we've made everything bite-sized so we can get it into a 15-second story clip and we can get like, well, I have 2 seconds of people's attention on Instagram. So how do I create like a top 5 list of ways? It's like, oh my God, we are doing such a disservice by trying to make this bite-sized. It's not bite-sized. Mm. It's deep and it's messy. It's often painful until you shift and you embody this new way of treating yourself. And that's what we're doing, right? We're like changing the lens and how we see our life. So, and how we see ourselves. And for me, where I come from, like the lens through which I always look is like, when you truly love yourself, like truly love yourself, not talking like I love myself enough to have two cupcakes after dinner because it felt good. No, when you truly love who you are as a person, quote unquote, in spite of everything, like all of the other stuff that, you know, you've struggled with, when you are able to really love yourself unconditionally and accept yourself and really embrace all of the things that make you you, that is ultimately the metric of success. I think too often, it's kind of going off script a little bit for what you asked me, but like too often we focus on like, okay, what do I want? Well, I know I want to drive a Mercedes truck. Well, I know I want a house in this particular neighborhood. I want a husband who looks like this or a wife who looks like that. What we don't focus it on is the feeling. So suddenly we get the house, we get the truck, we get the family, we get all the things. We're like, oh shit, I still feel like shit. When we shift that awareness and be like, I want to feel free. I want to feel at peace. I want to feel completely able to walk around my house in my track pants singing Taylor Swift off key. And I want to feel fucking great about it. When you shift into those feelings and embracing that and accepting that, everything else in your life experiences those ripple effects from that like foundation level at which you're living, right? So in my own life, knowing or having had the experience of like, wow, I had material success all around me and like, it wasn't good enough. Like it didn't feel good. It didn't feel supportive. I had people all around me all the time, like all these friends and parties. It like, wow, I felt alone all the time. And so for me, it was like undoing, peeling it back, learning the lesson, digging deeper and just being so at peace with like, okay, cool. What's that feeling? What feedback is it giving me? Oh, that's giving me some insights as to what still needs to be healed, what still feels triggery or uncomfortable. And then I would just kind of like poke away at it a little bit more.
I just want to say how much I appreciate that about you, because in a couple of the podcasts I've listened to, a couple of your podcasts, you just were very upfront about things on Instagram not being true and how things in real life are actually a lot harder than people make it seem. And so even in growing your own business, you were very honest about, hey, I've been doing this for 5 years. You know, there was no five easy steps for me to get where I am. And I see you doing that in terms of this emotional awareness. And it's this belief in people that they can do hard things. They can do the heavy lifting of being with their emotional wounds or whatever it is in order to, you know, become that beautiful butterfly that goes to Mexico. And so I'm still so curious about your story and this awakening or this realization in your 30s when you're married with your three kids in the beautiful house and realizing there's more here and then doing some inner work there. Mm-hmm. And then it would be nice if you could just kind of put a bow and say, that's it. I'm done. I'm ready for life.
But
there was the divorce and there was the cancer. So can you tell us a bit more about these other adversities in your life?
Yeah. So divorce is the worst experience I think anybody could ever go through. Like while I am a huge champion of doing what is right for you and of being in a partnership that feels good, even if that is self-partnership for a period of time, if you were in an unloving or unhealthy relationship, you have to leave it, period. I'm a huge advocate for that. I'm also a huge advocate for like, nobody tells you when you get married, especially when you're married with children, what divorce is going to be like. Nobody talks about the fact that you can leave the marriage, but you never leave that relationship. You will always be in a relationship with them because of your kids. And that it's awful. My divorce was probably easier than most people's. Like it was less messy than people. And it was way harder than cancer. Like divorce was way harder than cancer. So, you know, divorce was its own thing, but everything that I learned, I kind of was healing through divorce and healing all my childhood stuff at the same time. So you can imagine that was fun, but it also invited this opportunity to like keep looking for that feedback emotionally and figure out what wound was being triggered. Divorce actually for me did trigger complex PTSD. So post-traumatic stress disorders. Divorce was such a trauma that it like brought up everything I had repressed and even had like blacked out from being a kid. It brought it all to the surface. So that, that was really spicy. That was like its own process. And interestingly, because I had you know, I was in the process of doing this work and really like starting a coaching practice and really feeling so clear on who I was and feeling so at peace with that. Then I got this crazy surprise cancer diagnosis. I am positive, and I know not everybody agrees with this or relates to this, but for me personally, my experience is that there were 3 tumors in my left breast. I can give you the name of each person that tumor mm-hmm. was. I can give you the name mm-hmm. of who I had to cut out for all of the mm-hmm. anger and all the resentment and all the unprocessed terror I had stored in my body, and it manifested as lumps.
Wow.
Sorry, that's my truth.
I believe it.
And it was because I had been able to, or I had had the quote unquote opportunity to go through all those challenges and really go through that healing process emotionally for all the other stuff, that it next leveled my coping mechanisms for cancer. I'd already had experiences on how to do hard things, how to do scary things, it taught me more about how to ask the right people for the right kind of help, which meant all kinds of lessons in boundary setting instead of my previous patterns of like, I need to be loved. Are you available to love me? Cool. You know, then getting disappointed over and over and over again. So it really leveled up my ability to ask for the right kind of help, set the right kind of boundaries, really believe in who I am, get very, very crystal clear on what is my intention for this life and for my business, for my family. Because it's really easy for us to talk about like, all you have to do is manifest it, like mm-hmm. just want it and you get it. And then talk to me, like talk to those same people who are saying that stuff and dig a little deeper in their lives, because most of them have nothing to back that up. Most of them have not had, you know, these like wild extenuating circumstances. So for me being like, holy shit, I just got breast cancer. What does that say about my beliefs, my belief system, my faith, my process, like all of that thing? It challenged all of that. But the biggest thing that cancer did for me, and you know, things are always a paradox, right? There's like a blessing and a curse, the two sides of the same coin. For me, cancer was terrifying because it provided this opportunity to get even deeper with my darkest shadows. So just when I thought I like went deep and healed it all and was like getting ready to skip through the fields, I was like, oh, wait, there's more. And it challenged all kinds of beliefs I'd had about lovability. Because suddenly, you know, for me, cancer, we actually got cancer removed from my body so fast and it hadn't spread anywhere. It was like miracle upon miracle. But the treatment was so aggressive that I had 4 months of chemo, which meant absolute hair loss. And then I had a double mastectomy because we didn't want any remaining trace, any possibility there could be like any sleeper cells of cancer. So like I was bald and I'm flat. I chose not to do reconstructive surgery. Well, when you're bald and flat or contemplating being both bald and flat, I had this disgusting awareness, like I can't do this because of how I might look. I'm not particularly vain. And going, I was like, what? Where's that coming from? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there comes that message again, that really deep, dark shadow space of like, honey, if you couldn't find a man when you had long blonde hair and like perfect tits, mm-hmm. good luck finding somebody to love you now. And it was like a devastating blow to hear those words and really hear that belief come up. And only through experiencing that in such a head-on way was I able to challenge that and be like, do I even believe this? Like, I don't think that's true. How can I disprove that old, deeply held limiting belief and challenge it and move forward in a way that really makes me love and accept myself? And that was like the Mac Daddy of self-acceptance, being like, all right, are we doing this or are we not? Mm.
To call myself beloved. Like that, you have this trigger warning on one of your podcasts when you read the poem, which is like, get ready to cry, get ready to feel emotional, because the depth of it, when you recited it, I was listening to your podcast, you know, I was going for a walk on the beach and I was listening and I heard you recite the poem. And because I'd, you know, heard the name before through your podcast and through your website and online, it didn't affect me until I heard you read the poem and it sat with me for a few moments. And then I was like, oh, that is so profound. Can you recite that to us and tell us where this name came from for you?
Yes. So this is It's a poem called Late Fragment by Raymond Carver. And he's an American author. I think it came out in the 60s. It was like published in the Atlantic Monthly. And I found it at just this weird, I was on a movie, like it came up on the screen and I was watching this movie and I just read those words and it really hit me. But the poem is, to my mind, it's just a conversation between God and a woman at the end of her life reflecting. And it goes like this. Did you get what you wanted out of this life in the end? I did. And what was it that you wanted? To call myself beloved and to feel myself beloved on the earth. To me, it was like my second of my 22 tattoos, right? And to me, you can want the truck and the family and the this and the that, but like at the end of the day, that's what we want. We want to be able to feel loved by ourselves and we want to feel like we belong here. Like it is that simple. It is that complicated. So to me, it's this like profound truth wrapped up in four lines of prose.
It's beautiful. It's, you know, I think often that false belief that we are unworthy is what drives a lot of our society right now in terms of, you know, there's a core wound that all of us are sharing and buying into that has us buy more than we need and distract ourselves from what we truly want.
Yeah.
And it's suffering and, and what, you know, it's so inspiring to have someone like you say, you know, there's another way.
There's another
trust
way.
Me. There's so, another way.
Yeah. And it's so funny. Like I use this example. I love mascara, which is why I think I use this mascara example over and over again. But like, nobody has to say to you anything other than you can have longer, fuller lashes with this mascara. That's all they have to say. And what you actually perceive is like, wait, just wait. Does that mean my lashes aren't long and full enough already? That's interesting. I've never thought about that. Now the seed is planted, right? It's like when you take your kids to the doctor or your dog to the vet and you're like, don't worry, it's not going to hurt. And it's like, is there a chance this might hurt? It
like drives I wasn't thinking about that before.
Yeah. It's like, don't think, whatever you do not think of this super fuzzy pink elephant. It's like, that's all I can think of right now. And so when somebody says to you like, oh, for $29.99, you can have longer, fuller lashes. But then when they pair that image with sex and love and glamour and friendship and like all those things that we're like, oh shit. I really want more of that in my life, but hiring a coach is obviously too expensive and doing this healing is obviously too much work. So I'm going to give you $29.99 and I'm going to get those like badass lashes. And it's like, ooh, we missed the point. Like you're allowed to look good and you're allowed to feel good too. And you're allowed to take a different approach without over consuming and constantly chasing. It's like chasing this dragon. Like you can never get enough because enough becomes a moving target that you just can't ever satisfy.
I wonder a bit about just what you said about the breast cancer. And, you know, I think there's the childhood conditioning, which in your case was challenging, right? It really, you know, did a number. And then there's the cultural societal conditioning. And it's almost like that was that voice that was speaking to you. And that's that mascara voice. You know, even if you were raised with parents who loved you and told you were worthy and full of everything, you go out in the world. And if you're a woman, the world tells you, you are not perfect as you are. You know,
and
you need the breast
to tell you that it can just allude to it or hint at it. And then you get this confirmation bias because what you see and believe to be true, you keep believing to be true because you just keep looking for more information in your environment to prove that is true. Right. Mm-hmm. So if that's your experience, you're like naturally primed to confirm that to be true, even if you don't want it to be. So I don't know. I think that now the world is changing so rapidly. Right. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, but we're the media. And, you know, your podcast is a great example. I feel like there's so much integrity behind your brand, behind my brand of like, no, I have a voice and I'm going to use that voice. And sometimes I don't get it right. And I know that sometimes I make mistakes and I know that. But like, I think the important thing is to appreciate, you know, I have influence because I am courageous enough to use my true voice in the way that it feels true to me to positively impact and affect people in the best way that I can, using my own unique strengths and gifts, not for any other reason except I believe in service. And I believe that really aligns very well that I can help make a difference in somebody's life by showing them, like teaching them what I know, right? Through earned experience. So if we shift, like, we're the media, well, guess what? I'm not going to participate in those conversations anymore. When I'm following people online that, even if they have the same message over and over again about like this body positivity or whatever, it's like enough now. Like, that's enough for me. I don't even want to hear about how much I should love my body. I'm actually just going to love my body. You know, like, I don't even want to plant that seed of like, no, it might not be enough. Mm-hmm. So I feel like when we shift into, yeah, but we're the media and we have affect and we have not a say, but we have a voice that we can use to give people an alternative to feel differently about themselves, then I think that you can very quickly also become a more conscious consumer of what you're engaging in.
There are so many mixed messages and I would say fucked up messages about worthiness out there. And one of them is particularly for women is the message about money and making money and having yes. money. And Liz and I talk about this a lot as business owners and also as women who were trained and conditioned to potentially rely on our partners for that financial stability. Mm-hmm. And so I too am divorced and have very similar experiences to you in that area. And I know you've mentioned this before where, you know, you relied on him to cover all the financials. So that just mm-hmm. wasn't your realm. Mm-hmm. Same thing for me. I did other things and, mm-hmm. you know, those were my jobs and that was his job. And so, you know, coming out of that, I had to learn, and it wasn't like relearn. I'd never even learned. I had to learn all of that stuff on my own. But I also am and still in the process of unlearning that conditioning of, am I worthy enough to make a shit ton of money? Am I worthy enough to be able to be stable on my own and support my own family? And so tell me about your experience with this and the work that you've done through this.
I'm just getting my pen. Taking notes.
Right. That's such a great question. Also very layered because this is so funny. Like, this is the first time we've really met. I'm nice and fun. This is like the most intense conversation we're having, but like, there's also so much levity to our lives, right? These conversations are so important because they're so juicy. And when you like get really clear on them, I think it allows for even more levity. But anyway, I'm just so, I'm like, this is so real. This is like the realest conversation.
We go deep.
I love it. But I think that there, you get these two weird streams, right? You come from a place where what we're talking about is financial literacy. Really and truly, we are talking about financial literacy. And money mindset is an offshoot of financial literacy. But if nobody ever teaches you, and this happens to men too, if nobody ever teaches you the language of money and the language of business, the language of commerce, you're isolated. And when you're isolated, you do, like the first thing when somebody's learning English as a second language, the first thing they do is they go through all the nouns. You know, when you were learning French in school as a kid, you label everything, you name everything. So when you haven't yet learned the language of money, suddenly you're in this foreign land where you don't speak the same language and you don't have the tools to communicate. Well, guess what? That leads to a billion degrees of shame and guilt and fear because it's like, oh my God, I don't even know how to participate in this conversation. I must be stupid. Not thinking of like, no, I've just never had an opportunity to learn this conversation because until very recently, this hasn't even been taught in our schools. Mm-hmm. So this is like, unless your family was really good and really open and had a really healthy mindset and didn't really get affected by the depression and didn't get into the entitlement of like, how can we exploit other people for our own good? Like, we're talking about a very narrow margin of people here who have a very healthy approach to financial literacy, right? Unless you got that education at home, you didn't get it. And so for me, that was the awareness of like, okay, I don't even know how to participate in this conversation. How do I learn a little bit about it so I can participate in this conversation? And I found a company that I really liked. They don't exist anymore, but at the time they existed. And I got so much financial literacy and education from them to enable my own to enable me to grow my confidence in being able to participate. And once you know the language, it's not hard. You just have to be able to participate in this. And then you slip into, okay, but what is the story I'm telling myself? Like, why do I feel really uncomfortable with the idea of cracking past $50,000 or $75,000 or you know, $100,000 or $1 million. Like, what's the ceiling, and why does it make me feel like I'm going to barf to be able to say like, no, I can make seven figures a year and be comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. So you have to do like undo all that storytelling and all those narratives about worth and about capability and about not entitlement, but about like, I think capability and how you're going to do that. Right. But so many women jump the shark. They don't necessarily do that emotional work and get really clear on that. They just jump to, well, they said it couldn't be done, therefore I'm going to do it. So they make six figures, and they make multiple six figures, and then they make seven figures. And guess what? They still feel like shit. And like, even seven figures isn't enough. Even six figures a month isn't enough, because all of a sudden that moving target just keeps moving, because it too becomes this thing that we're chasing that will never, ever be enough. So it's like, I always caution people to be like, absolutely expand your wealth consciousness. What does that mean? Like, wealth is so much more than a number in the bank. It's health, it's lifestyle, it's freedom, it's access to opportunity, it's joy, it's peace. It's like, it's so abundant in its definition. It is not singularly defined by like, I make this much money. Oh my God, where's that conversation? Because it's really easy, again, to hop on Instagram and be like, no, I'm abundant. I live an abundant life. Cool. What does that mean to you? Does it mean you launch some course that had like a five system approach that you sold people on, and now you're making six figures? Like, that's not enough. There's so much more behind the conversation. So for me, in my very meta practical way, that's what I had to do. I had to learn to participate in the language of financial literacy. I had to undo all kinds of limiting beliefs about worthiness and value. And then I had to synthesize it in my own way based on intention and value of how I want to show up in my life and what I want out of it.
So what's the story?
Is that a clear, concise answer for you?
Amazing. It's amazing. And I'm curious, as someone who has done all that work, you know, you've done all this work. So what's the story you tell yourself now around wealth and success?
Oh, I think it's a good one. And for me, it's consistently shifting. I think that, you know, like once you get really clear on it, you just like fine tune that radio dial and you get more and more clear on it. So for me, I really believe this is about service and intention. And, I believe like abundance to me is, it's comfort, it's freedom, it's opportunity to say yes to what you want to say yes to and say no to what you want to say no to, simply because that aligns for you. Like, we're talking, that's freedom to me. That is wealth. And for me to be able to make an income while making an impact resonates with every single one of my values. So my biggest intention here is to shift the global conversation on emotional health and self-love. So even a few months ago, I had, you know, during COVID, I have worked so much in my business, and I've like invested so much in my business, and I thought I was going to go in one direction. And I've stripped it right down to be like, you know what? That is my intention. I don't know what it's going to look like. I imagine I'm going to be on the stage speaking. I imagine there are TV shows involved. I imagine thought leadership. But I'm so focused on like, here are my gifts. Here are my experiences. Here's my actual zone of genius, which is passionate and purposeful and doesn't ever feel like work. Like, I want to talk about this all the time. I'm going to follow that. Every single time I followed that current, shit works out. When I put too many, because I'm an overachiever, and I put like all kinds of expectations, and it's like, okay, cool, I kicked my money mindset. Well, it's July. I should be making 250,000 bucks by, let's say, November. It's like, oh my God, then I start to self-destruct, right? So I'm very focused on maintaining what my values are, what my why is, what my intention is. And I know that success is a long game, that as I just like get more and more clear about the value I offer to myself, to my family, to other people around me, I think the path just naturally appears. Mm-hmm.
Your purpose is so aligned with the afterglow, right? Your clarity in what you want, right? Mm-hmm. Confidence in who you are, courage to stay true to both. Mm-hmm. So how would you describe you? How would you describe yourself in this?
Nobody ever asks me that question. I always ask other people that question.
Little personal bio.
How would I describe myself? I mean, I have said to my business coach and my PR team so many times recently, like, how do I describe myself? Like, dating is the same thing for me. I'm like, I can't online date. how do I take this and put it into words? So I think I am dynamic. I think I am a person who is so aligned with her values, her intention. I think I'm an incredibly loving person who is very keenly aware of the human experience and deeply desires to share that joy and that passion with others.
Beautiful. I see that too. I see that, all of that. And I see that vision of you speaking on stage too, inspiring others. I see that as well. So you've done all this inner work. You have a strong purpose. And, you know, Julie and I have talked a lot about how that's awesome. You know who you are. You know what's important to you. You know how you want to be of service. And then you go out in the world and the world's not quite fully ready for that, right? Like the world doesn't support that bigness, you know? And so do you still have tension between your purpose and your fear? And do you still feel, you know, your longing and past conditioning? And how do you navigate that?
I do. And thanks for asking such a genuine question. And I feel like we're never allowed to have this conversation, right? Until we become successful. Like when you've arrived, then you're allowed to have that conversation. But while we're in it, it's like, oh my God, it doesn't make any sense for me to have this conversation building a brand. Except for me, as a person of authenticity and integrity, it's like, no, this probably makes a lot of sense to be that honest about it. I have doubt and I have fear, of course. That's not a bad thing. I think that does also invite the opportunity to really reflect and challenge your own views again. And just again, like it's this fine tuning on the radio dial, right? Like really just tightening up that frequency. Sometimes, especially with partnership, I think that my old love story and like that lovability piece is so huge for me. Like it's such a deep wound that if anything, that is the trigger over and over again. Mm. It's like, oh, another week has gone by. Guess I'll be single forever. And it's like, oh my God, still like after all this work and like tens of thousands of dollars, still I'm triggered by that as somebody who loves being alone. Like I'm doing all the right things. And it's like, that's a trigger for me that I have to continuously coach myself through and like appreciate all the lessons.
Well, and Lisa, I don't know if you feel this way, but Julie and I, we talk about this. We're like, it's the time of the month or it's the moon is in a certain phase.
100%, and then all of a sudden, without question.
You know, I'm triggered. Question.
And when you can, I love the analogy of like being able to zoom out, because when you're in the moment, which is important to be very in the moment and be present, that's a really good thing. Except when you're in the moment and that's all you can see, then you lose that like forest through the trees concept, right? So when you can zoom out, it's like, have you always felt lonely or have you felt lonely, you know, because it's Friday night and you have your period and it's a full moon. It's like, oh, right. Like, you know, it's like COVID, there's context. Well, but overall, what I do when I like want to combat that stuff for me, especially about success, because same thing, like Brené Brown, Gabby Bernstein, you know, Glennon Doyle, it's like, what wonderful role models. Oh my God, do not compare your upcoming book to Glennon Doyle's third book. Like that's not a fair metric of success, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, I love to study very, very, very successful stories. And what I really like is to trace back all their failures. So watching, you know, The Last Dance on Netflix with Michael Jordan, like the story of the killer few seasons of the Chicago Bulls in the 90s. So powerful because it was not easy. I just finished Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, like reading the story of Nike and how they were in like six-figure debt for most of their existence. It's like, oh, there's so much insight to be learned from really, really successful or like those foregone conclusions that I love being able to reverse engineer their success and be like, okay, so they ended here. Where did they start? And how did they get to that point? And what were the failures like on the way? What was the rejection like? What were the milestones and the obstacles? And I find that very, very comforting to be like, This is not the end. You know, just because I haven't experienced like the wild growth that I think I will experience, it just hasn't happened yet. And I'm getting more and more comfortable with just really trusting every single marker along the way and being at peace with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, when you think about it, like you mentioned Brené Brown, like her research and stuff came out of her own deep shame. You know, Glennon Doyle's books were about all of her trauma and her alcoholism and eating disorders and stuff, right? Gabby Bernstein was a drug addict. Like, there's all these experiences that we're just looking at their incredible books with all this sort of self-help without realizing that, you know, all that, again, messiness and the digging deep and the shit that you've gone through to get to where you are. So how are you now today?
Really great. Really great. You know, I don't know, just very honestly, I'm great. I'm so grateful for the way that my life has unfolded. I've been able to look back at each of those pieces and really learn, like really, really learn from them and really distill messaging down and use that to help transform myself in this moment. And, you know, allow myself, as I say, to have my experience informed by my past and not allow the past to dictate my future. And I don't know, I have this lovely little family. We've got this great comfortable house. COVID has revealed so much of, like, you know, I live in a small town east of Toronto, which sometimes feels too small. During COVID, I'm like, thank God for a small town. Like, what would I have done in living in this city or something, right? Like, it's just been a gift to have green space and a little market community grocery store that delivers. There have been so many more moments of, like, you know, it really is the simple things. It's really those little things that are actually the big things. So I don't know. Overall, I just feel so fortunate to live where I live, to do what I do, to have the work that I do. Like, people pay me to talk about this stuff, and that's great. It also changes lives. And when I help somebody transform, I know the effect that has on their business, on their lives, on their relationships. It's like, it's such a fulfilling life. It's just such an awesome moment to be in right now.
Mm-hmm. One of our questions we like to ask all of our guests is, what is your afterglow? And by that, we mean, what's your vision for the next 30, 40, 50 years? And if you could speak to that, perhaps touch on your vision for yourself and your vision for our planet.
Our vision for our planet, I don't know. We, you know, when COVID first hit, I was like, this is going to dismantle the patriarchy. And, like, we are going to, this is the undoing. I don't know if that's true. I don't know what it looks like. I think that, you know, change is a long game. And I think that having the attention drawn to how much inequality is happening in our world and systems have been built on that inequality. And I think that's shifting. When I have conversations with my kids, like, you know, we were playing the game of life not too long ago at a cottage, and in the game of life, you stop on the marriage spot and the girls were like, do you want to be married to a man or a woman? You know, like, immediately they're like, They get it. We can watch shows like The Babysitter's Club on Netflix talks about trans and gender fluidity. And, like, my kids who are almost 8 and almost 10 get it in a way that we never had even an opportunity to have those conversations out loud. So that gives me so much hope. And I think that, you know, right now we're in it. We're in that moment where it's like death and decay. When we can zoom out, I really believe this is leading us somewhere more beautiful and more effective. I don't know what that looks like yet. And I'm just open to following and kind of seeing what happens with hope and with courage. I think people are incredibly resilient. And I think this is going to lead us somewhere really positive. I just have no idea what that looks like in them at all. For me personally, I mean, my first book, that's such a huge accomplishment. I wrote most of it during chemo. Like, I wrote the book proposal during chemo, which is the bulk of the work. And, you know, that's available now. It's like, oh my God, it took me 3 years to convince myself I was a person who was capable of writing a book. Right. And so that's like such a huge achievement. Just personally, I sold so many copies in pre-sale and they're going to, I think it's 5 different continents. Like, it has crazy global reach already. So it feels like I'm throwing those little pebbles and it's having these ripple effects, which is my vision. I'm going to be on a TV show. We're shooting, hopefully, we're shooting this show in the fall. It's called The Social Movement. And they're taking like 60 people from all over the world, grouping them down by expertise and giving everybody a real life problem to solve. So when, you know, I get assigned to like education or literacy or something like that, then we pitch those solutions to a team of investors who have the means to implement the change. So I have a feeling between the book and the show, I think my presence is expanding. And I think what that looks like is, again, like maybe being an expert on a TV show, or maybe being like a phone-in expert, or maybe having my own show, or definitely being on a stage sharing this message with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I deeply desire partnership. I very much see like an incredible man in our future. I have no idea when, and I'm trying to let go of that timeline. But, you know, because of my own rocky start and my own weird definition of what a family looks like, against all odds, I'm a really, really wonderful and present mother. And so the idea of having like, you know, two parents and three kids in a household is so beautiful to me that I'm like, oh, that's like the biggest part of the vision, very honestly. So I think it all looks good. And it's just a matter of pacing myself and letting it unfold in its due timing.
I love that. It's funny that you were talking about your kids bringing up, you know, just being so current and being so open and knowing enough to say, do you want to be married to a man or a woman? You know, that comes from you, right? Like that comes from your impact and your influence and your guidance throughout and shining a light on things that they can then take with them and, you know, do what they want, but allowing for that openness for them to explore, right? Mm-hmm. And so another question we ask is, what would you say to your 15-year-old self? And so if you could go back and think about that, what would you say to your younger self?
Definitely that you alone are enough. I know very well that I wouldn't have understood that at 15. Like I didn't understand it at 29 when somebody said it to me either, right? But that message that you alone are enough, you have everything you need inside of you, and who you are is who you're meant to be.
Mm. And one last question. People listening, typically women, people who identify as women, do you have any last words you'd like to share with them?
Yeah. The fact too, that like, you're never alone in your feelings. We have this profoundly similar human experience, but we have it in isolation. So any of the icky or uncomfortable feelings we have, they're so icky and they're so uncomfortable because we've never been taught how to feel our feelings. We've mm-hmm. always been taught to gloss over them and please other people and make other people comfortable. That everything you feel, probably everybody else around you is feeling too, but then we have them in isolation, which piles layers and layers and layers of shame on top of them. And then we get to this situation where, you know, you wake up, you're like, oh my God, I've been sleepwalking through my life. Now what the hell do I do? So my overarching message, and I think the takeaway is that like, all you have to do is start. You don't have to know how to finish. All you have to do is start. And starting is that courage to just listen to your voice and appreciate like, when you feel that something is off, it's because something is off. It's not because you're crazy or you're doing something wrong or maybe I misunderstood. Mm. No, something is off. So if you're being led in a certain direction, like, trust that and follow that and go one step at a time. Don't ever stop moving, but you do have to start. And you're allowed to ask for help even to get that process started. That is not weakness. That is absolute strength to be able to have that self-awareness that tells you it's okay and it's safe to ask for help in doing so.
Well, thank you so much for being so open and honest and sharing so much of your wisdom and your vulnerable experiences with us. It's really just a powerful, powerful conversation that we've had today.
Well, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure. And thank you for your excellent interviewers and me. Like, thank you for offering this platform to so many people who are going to be changed by all of the conversations you have.
Amazing. And where can our listeners find you online?
LiseWilcox.com is the hub. It has my information about private coaching. I have a couple of courses, launch party for the book. You can get the book. You can get the podcast. Everything's at LiseWilcox.com. I'm also on Instagram at LiseWilcox, and like every social channel is also my name, but LiseWilcox.com is the hub.
Awesome. It's a beautiful site. So check it out.
So we're going to end the way that you've ended before, because it's such a incredible statement to say, but stay gold, Lise.
That's a wrap. Thanks for listening in. Be sure to follow us on social media at the Afterglow Podcast Official and take a minute to leave us a rating or review on Apple, Spotify, and Google. Lift a sister up and share the Afterglow with others who are seeking their courageous second act.